We can
I screwed this up
actually,
royally.
Actually, somebody can't get in the room, and if they open the door, it'll probably be pretty disturbing to the recording.
Order some beers. We order.
Hey, Will, please send beers back to
That is totally a service that we should build. A Slack bot that brings you beer.
That delivers beers to your desk on like Friday. He takes your order Friday at 3 o'clock. He comes into the general channel and is like,
no,
hey,
you just,
Boston.
Whenever you want a beer, you just say beer me, Slack bot, and suddenly a Postmates guy comes with a case of beer. Hello, this is the Tentative Podcast, where we talk about product design. I'm Kyle Fiedler, and filling in for Rada today is...
Brenda Storer.
Yeah.
Hey.
So, I invited you on this podcast because last night you gave a really great talk on SVGs, and I learned a lot, and so hopefully without... being able to show anyone anything, because this is all audio, I'm hoping that we can relay some more of that information. That might be challenging at times because some of your talk was about code, but screw it. So the first thing I think we need to get out of the way right away is the whole copy from Illustrator and paste into any text file and you get SVG code.
Yeah, this was the best part of the talk, the reaction in the room when I showed this. And so this is a tip I got from one of our designers in the New York office, Will McMahon, is that you can just select anything you want within an Illustrator file and copy it to your clipboard, either using Command C or going to the file, copy. And then you can open any text editor. I use Sublime Text. And if you hit paste, it will paste the SVG code.
So the thing that blew my mind the most about that was that the SVG code was cleaner than the exported. If you exported it out as an SVG in Illustrator, you get a bunch of the cruft that Illustrator gives you, and the view box, which we can get into later, actually starts at 0.0, which in Illustrator, when you export it out, it might not necessarily do that.
Yeah, I've struggled trying to figure out how to make my artboard in Illustrator perfect so that I can, when I export my SVG, the view box starts at 0.0, although I was always too afraid to manipulate anything anyway. It just seemed like something was off because my view box was starting at -6.789, and it just seemed like it wasn't efficient. And so that's also the other great thing about the copy paste thing from Illustrator is that it always starts the view box at 0.0, and it makes the view box the perfect size around your illustration or your vector.
So I think I kind of jumped the gun there, but can you explain a little bit what the view box is and how it shows up in SVG code?
Okay, so there's the concept of the viewport, which is the height and width of an SVG. The viewport we also are very familiar with as the browser window we refer to as a viewport. But the SVG has its own viewport, which is just the height and width of the SVG. And that's in, pixels usually. It's relative. It's what we're all familiar with, 200 pixels by 100 pixels SVG viewport is the same as a 200 pixel by 100 pixel image on your web page. It would take up the same amount of space. But then there is the concept of SVG of the view box, which is setting up the coordinate system that all of the shapes and paths in, or all the elements in your SVG refer to those coordinates to know where to draw themselves. How was that explanation without any visuals? Did that come across?
I think that was pretty good.
I think I feel pretty good about that.
So it shows up as four numbers, right?
It's, yeah.
And, And the best way to describe it, like, or the best way I think to have it is to, the starting point is usually, or hopefully, 0, 0. And then the other two probably relate to your width and height of the viewport.
Yes.
Am I getting
of the view? No, of the view box. I know. Okay. Of the view box. And so the first two coordinates, which is, it's nice if it's 0, 0, are the X and Y of the starting point of where you, the view box draws from. So if it's 0, 0, it's going to be 0, 0 on the viewport two. So it would be the top left corner. And then the other two values refer to how big that view box is. The third value is the X axis. So that would like be the width. And then the fourth value is the Y, which would be how tall it is, but it draws down from the top left corner. So that would be the bottom left corner if it was a box. I'm totally like gesticulating with my hands to draw all of this to visually show you how it makes sense.
I'm sure that'll be conveyed to everyone when they listen to this. They'll be able to see all of your gestures in their minds. So that was interesting to me. But before that, like, you went over a lot of the cruft that Adobe Illustrator and Sketch in particular, like, spit out at you.
They put so much stuff in there. They just, I mean, Sketch especially. Just
so my workflow for that used to be, maybe it still will be if I'm super lazy, but just running through SVGO or just SVGO or SVGO or however you
want
to call it.
I don't know. I like
the open
to say
source
SVGO, but I think that's wrong.
I think you're adding an extra G in there.
I know, but it sounds funner.
Sounds cooler.
Yeah.
So that for me has been my workflow for a little while, is just throwing into that and that being able to like remove all of that junk.
Yeah.
Why did you want to go through and see like what was actually important and what wasn't? And then is this something now that like when you do add SVGs to your projects, are you doing it by hand?
Yeah, I do it by hand. Because for the most part, since I really started like understanding SVGs, I'm not drawing really fancy, complicated things. If I'm creating a really huge illustration that has tons of paths and tons of shapes, like going in by hand and removing every class name that Sketch like inserts in there is probably not an efficient use of my time. But if I'm just, you know, making a little icon and it's only like two shapes, then it's easier for me to do that. I think I also have like the reverse problem of most developers where they don't want to do something by hand. So they'll like create something that will just automate it for them. Where sometimes I don't like to do that because I like to do things repetitively in a way that will help me remember it. Like I don't use shortcuts with Git because otherwise I'll forget what those things are. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't.
I've totally gone down that road.
So I mean, I type origin incorrectly every time I type it, but I know what it is. I don't know. So I think like optimizing my own SVGs kind of was me going down that path of like wanting to understand it. So I'm going to do it the hard way to understand it, if that makes sense.
I think so. I think like it's a better path than I took, which was just like, oh, there's this tool that'll strip everything unnecessary away and I don't have to actually learn about it.
The other thing was, the thing that got me interested in researching or learning more about SVGs was last year at CSS Conf in 2014. It was the first time I think that Sarah Sweden spoke on SVGs. And it was kind of one of the first talks about SVGs, and she just blew the room away. And I was super inspired, and I just wanted to like go into a corner and play around for the rest of the conference. I started to look at SVGO, and actually, you know what kept me away from it is it was like Node, and I was like, oh gosh, I hate dealing with those things. So instead of like having to figure out how to do something with Node, and I don't know, maybe it's like super simple, I was like, I'm not going to do this.
So then my other experience has just been going in and randomly deleting things until I figure out that I've broken the SVG.
Yeah, yeah. But that's super easy. You can do that like the first thing you touch.
Right. So like how did you go about like methodically learning about the actual what is necessary versus what isn't?
There was a book that I did most of, and it's SVG Compressed by Jacob Jenkop. This book, so I bought it on Kindle, which was silly because it has all these like colorful examples and illustrations. And I have like, you know, a paper white Kindle which couldn't do that. And then I realized that he has the whole book online, and it has videos and it has like better examples on there too. And so that was kind of my starting point, was going through this book. And then when I'd get to things that he'd explain, and then I'd like Google search to find out more about it. So like namespacing was one of those things. That was kind of like a rabbit hole. For some reason, I found namespacing really interesting because there are these you know, unique identifiers for XML files, and they're URLs, but they often don't even go anywhere. Like that's like... I don't know. There's just something charming about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I enjoy when you did your talk yesterday that you pulled up the one that Sketch puts in, and it goes to a 404 page.
Yeah, yeah.
So you showed a bunch of other examples about doing shapes and gradients and animation. What right now are you like most excited to do? And like, what are you actually using in like client projects?
So the way I've been doing things in client projects is recently the most time I've used SVGs are for icons. So like I said, like they're simple. But I would have usually we're working on a platform. So I'm working on Ruby on Rails project or on an Ember JS application. And so they already have like a system where you pull in partials, you know, bits of code, you know, to compile a page. So I'd usually create a folder in there somewhere that was SVGs, and then just keep an individual SVG file in there, that folder, and then import it as a partial when I needed to use it. But what I really want to try is the technique that I talked about that Chris Coyer does, where he defines symbols for all of his icons in one SVG and then injects that SVG but doesn't display it on every page. I think he injects it with JavaScript. So it's basically like a font file just of all these symbols, and the symbols can be as many as complex, as many paths and shapes as you need them to be. And then all you have to do is like simply call SVG, make an SVG element, and inside make an element say use, and then call the name of one of those symbols. I think that sounds super exciting, and I want to explore using that in a project.
So you brought up a good point of like, what's, if you're using SVGs just for icons, is there a benefit to using just SVGs as opposed to the font icons that you talked about?
I mean, from what I've been reading, it seems like it seems like as front-end developers, font icons, we're kind of moving away from font icons, that they aren't as reliable. I think the two main reasons why I've stopped using icon fonts are that they're not as reliable in browsers. We'll display them differently, and I've had problems with that in the past. Where like line height will get strange in certain browsers. I don't know. Maybe that stuff's been worked out. And also it depends. If you can be importing like all of these icons that you aren't using because you're importing one whole font file. And also that they aren't as accessible. They're not, you know, really semantic. And SVG you can make more semantic and you can just have more control over them. I want control. I want all the control.
So, the big reason why I've started using a lot more SVGs instead of the font icons is just like I've run into so many bugs where like if the font doesn't render properly, it just shows up as a box, as like a unrecognized Unicode yes. symbol. And so yeah. on a Mac that shows up as a box, I don't remember what it does in Windows, but like I've run into so many bugs with that. And like, I think my frustration for font icons came
such a
directly
pain,
from that.
Right. And also I remember I'd like to use InTypo a lot. I mean, now actually I will open up InTypo in Illustrator and I'll render the glyph of the icon I want to use, and then I'll copy it and then paste it into Sublime and then create an icon of it. But I love to use InTypo, except I hated their Pinterest logo in InTypo because it was like, it's not, the Pinterest logo is a circle already, and all the InTypo icons, social icons, were circles, but it wasn't the right like ratio of the P inside of the circle based on their logo. So I'd always like just use their real logo. And so then I had one thing that was different than all the rest, like everybody else was InTypo. <I don't know. laughs> Detail-oriented designer.
Yeah, I don't think I ever used the Pinterest icon in InTypo.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
It never bothered me.
So I wanted to ask you about the talk too. Like, what did you already know, and what, like, besides like the copy paste, what else surprised you the most?
I actually already knew about the the animation technique that you showed. Mm-hmm. I've never been able to actually use it, but it seems super interesting.
It actually only made sense to me when I was describing it during the presentation. It was the first time it made sense to me.
Do you want to take a minute and like
yeah.
try and describe what's going on?
So in SVG, you can do all these attributes on a stroke, which is the same kind of thing as a border in CSS. But you can actually create dashed lines on a border, and you can control the size of the dashes and the size of the spaces in between the dashes. So starting with that, if you create a path and it has, let's say it's 200 pixels wide, and then you create a dash array, stroke dash array is the attribute, and you make it the same length as your path, which would be 200 pixels. And I guess it's not that simple. It's not just like the length, it's the whole squiggly line of the path, however long it is. So then you have one dash that fills up your whole path. And then after it is basically a space that is also the same length as your path. So there's also an attribute with SVGs called dash offset, which allows you to move where the start of your stroke dash is. So if you manipulate your stroke dash array, which is as long as your path, with the dash offset, it creates the illusion that your line is being drawn and it's being moved. And so I referenced an article by Jake Archibald called Animated Line Drawing in SVG. And he's got like a great little, what are these things called?
Demo.
Yeah, a great little demo, but like that you can play around with buttons to like understand how that works and play with it. That's a technique that I knew existed and I kind of got it. And then, yeah, totally yesterday. I think like that's the other thing, because I also started looking into SVG specifically because I wanted to try and give a technical talk, which I hadn't really done before. Like I teach HTML and CSS for Girl Develop It, and I really enjoyed that. And I found that I was teaching, but I feel like I learned as much as I was teaching. Like having to teach somebody else concepts that I thought I understood. Like, I really had to get into the nitty gritty of it and understand it in order to teach it. And it made me so much better. So I thought, oh, with SVGs, I can do the same thing. I'm going to plan to do a talk on it. So I'll have to figure it out so then I can teach it.
That is always like a really good way to learn something, is like to either force yourself to write a blog post about it or try and teach it. Because you end up learning, like, if you know it well enough to actually teach it, you just like have so much more knowledge of it.
Yeah. And it also gives me a deadline to have to get something done by, which is always useful. So how are you using SVGs on projects these days?
I use them similarly to the way that you described you use them. So I'm keeping them as separate entities. I'm not grouping them. I honestly, like, I see the benefit of it in a non-Rails project, but I'm not totally sold on, like, including it on every page, especially when you're not using every icon on every page. Because I imagine it's still including all of the SVG code. And even, like, I'm sure, like, gzipped, it's probably, like, tiny.
Yeah.
I still don't like extra stuff.
You know what? We came across, and I didn't, like, investigate this bug a lot, but I was on another project where somebody was doing that, was, like, inlining the SVG from a partial, and it was just a little place. It was, like, on a table where it was either selecting or unselecting an item in a table, but this table row, it could have, like, infinite amount of rows, and it ended up kind of slowing things down, and we realized that we could just fulfill that. It was actually just like a circle that was getting filled, and we're like, why is this SVG, you know, like, it's a circle. So I think that there's that, you can fall into that trap too, like, where you get excited, oh, my new toy, but, you know, CSS can do a lot too by itself in HTML.
Yeah. So I've just been including icons, I guess I think I haven't used SVG for anything other than icons. You know, bringing them in like the same workflow that you described, which is like making them partials in the Rails app or in Ember app and throwing them in when as needed. So it's not totally different than what you said yours was. I think the main thing that I'm doing that I think you weren't doing was like as I throw in individual icons, I'm also throwing them through SVGO. Or
how does SVGO work? Like, is it, do you do it through the terminal, you target a folder and it just optimizes them?
You can do a couple different things. You can, yeah, it's basically a command line interface, as like that's all I've used at least. And so you just say SVGO to a folder. You can say SVGO to a certain file. And that's the two ways that I usually use it. So like, I know when like I'm including one, I can usually run SVGO on that single file, but if I'm including multiples, I'll usually run on the folder. The big issue that I've run into with SVGO is that sometimes like if I run it twice on the same file, it gets a different result. And because like, because it shortens it to just one line. So the SVG is basically on one line.
Oh, it's hard to like find what
it's hard
happened.
To like, yeah, see the diff there and figure out why there's a change. So that's, I guess, the biggest issue that I have with that. And I know I've seen some of your pull requests, and I know Christian here, you know, hand cleans up the icons. And
oh, he
it
does
looks,
too? Yay.
Yeah. It looks so much nicer. I think one of the things that you said is like, I'm not totally sure that this is worth my time, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
I honestly love that like you guys care about the code to that level of detail.
I love deleting things more than anything. So like there's nothing better than a diff in a PR where you've deleted more lines than you've committed. Like I'm addicted to that feeling.
I always like the feeling where you like removed, you have zero additions and like thousands of lines of deletions. That's the best feeling.
Yeah, right?
Tentative is sponsored by Code School. Code School is an online learning destination for existing and aspiring developers. Brenda, have you used Code School before?
Yeah, I love Code School. I really like how interactive it is. And it has enough of like you follow along with somebody and then you have to do something by yourself, which is the best way for me to learn. So,
yeah, the videos and then the in-browser challenges are really awesome. Do they actually, I wonder if they have like SVG Code School.
Ooh, I don't know. I've done their Ember.
Is their Ember one very good?
Yeah,
their nice. Ember one. So everyone should go check out Code School. Check out their Ember course. And if you rate us on iTunes, you'll be put into a drawing for a free month of Code School.
Ooh, cool.
So yeah, go rate us and go to Code School. Thank you for sponsoring Tentative. So have you actually not used SVGO?
No, I never have.
You're like, screw this. I'm not using this.
I can do this. I don't need that. I don't need tools. I'm going to write everything like in the very early days when I was first learning, not even learning, I don't know. When I was like in the 90s, I was using like my text editor on my Mac to write HTML. And I had like no, I mean, I don't know what people like who knew what they were doing those days, but I didn't know at all what I was doing. And that was the only way I knew how to like do anything. But it had no like colorizing of code. And then I didn't understand that I could just save it as an HTML file and it would be okay. Like I still kept it as a TXT file and then I'd upload it, which would take forever to like a server. And then I'd change the name there. So it would render. See, doing things the hard way.
So painful.
Laborious.
So did you actually use like the text edit application on Mac?
Yeah, like the default text edit application. Yeah.
That's super hardcore.
Right. I made mistakes all the time. I mean, you know how hard it is to find like that you didn't like use a closing bracket?
Yeah, I can imagine without the code hinting, like not being able to see those errors would have been really hard.
Yeah, but it was basically paragraph tag, closing paragraph tag.
Were you also using tables?
No, this before tables. I mean, it was, my websites were literally image tag, paragraph tag, you know, HTML styles because it was like before CSS. Or CSS is really a thing. Break, break. Paragraph. Break, break.
So essentially you wrote Dreamweaver code without actually being in Dreamweaver.
Yeah. Yeah, well, then when I learned Dreamweaver, I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is the best thing ever. I was asking you what... I asked you what you already knew, but like, what was your biggest surprise? Or also like, what do you think like the people in the room, I mean, obviously the like copy paste thing went over well, but what else do you think was new information that was like, or most interesting?
For me, it was really interesting to hear about it's not doc type stuff, is it? What was the stuff?
The namespacing?
The namespacing. Just because I didn't understand what all of that was. And so understanding like which ones I can get rid of and which ones I need to keep was like, for me, that was interesting. Understanding, like I've seen Sketch's export of an SVG so many times and I've seen their like useless title and description tag. And like, I didn't know that that was actually useful for people for accessibility reasons.
Yeah.
And so like that to me is like, I guess there wasn't anything like as mind blowing as the copy paste thing. But like each one of those like themselves was like interesting to me. And I didn't totally understand why, like what the numbers were in the view box.
Yeah.
So, like, understanding that the first two are the first coordinates, and then the next two numbers are the X and the Y value. Honestly, like, it was really nice for me because you, like, did all the research that I wanted to do, but didn't, like, just haven't gotten around to. those to me were like the most important.
What do you think is going to be the most, or if anything, like just actually useful to take away?
For me, it'll be those. Like a lot of the other, like going through the shapes was nice, but like I think for the most part, I'm going to still rely on Illustrator or Sketch.
Oh, totally. If we ever have to write paths ourselves, like...
Yeah, I'll start crying.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So like that's interesting, but like that's not actually something that's going to help me on a project. The gradients is interesting, but I feel like I've used it before.
But yeah, I haven't used gradients and SVGs before, so I'm not even sure if that's incredibly useful. But it's all interesting. I don't know. There's
it
something
is.
About like
I really enjoy the animation,
just right.
Because
well,
like and there's never going to be a use case for me for it. Like there's never going to be a point where I can be like, hey client, I'm going to spend a day animating the stroke on this, so it looks like someone is drawing on your website. But it's super cool.
That's something I think about a lot, like with. Or I was having a conversation last night about, you know, consulting versus working on a product. And I mean, there's just there's positives in both. And then there's like drawbacks in both. And I the main positives, and I know that I really like working in consulting because I like the variety. I like getting to know different industries. When you bounce around from different projects, I like working with different people. But one of the things that I think we don't get an opportunity to do is, I guess it also depends on where you're working. When you're working on a product, if you have that time and if they're supportive of the exploration, like we'll never have a project where we can spend time to figure something like that out, you know, something special like that out, unless it's a internal thing.
Yeah, we also have investment days too.
Do something like that on investment day. But
so besides the like hand-drawn effect, how else would you like animate SVGs?
I think Iconic font is a really good example of the power of what you can do, where they have icon sets that they're responsive, as in when they get smaller, they get more simple, and so they're more understandable. And so, like, the drawing actually changes, that you can do that with, when something's responsive, I think would be really fun to explore. And there's so much possibility with that.
But other than that, like, you can just apply any other CSS animations to it, right?
Yeah.
Are there other, like, interesting ways? Like, well, I enjoyed the one demo that you gave of, like, you animating the clouds on the Manhattan JS project.
Thanks. That was, like... when I didn't know any JavaScript, I started organizing a JavaScript meetup, and I wrote that JavaScript, and it's like two lines, and I was so proud.
I think simple things like that are like a really nice effect. That's using JavaScript. Clearly, like it's an animation as you scroll, so you need to know position.
Yeah, so it's on the website for manhattanjs.com, and there's a Chrysler Building animation, and then there's two clouds next to it, and the clouds, when you scroll down the page, the clouds just kind of move alongside the Chrysler Building, and they move differently as if they're in perspective. They just each cloud is they're just one path, so they each have their own class name, and I targeted them with a scroll event so that they respond to this when the page scrolls, they are transformed a certain way. So super simple, but I agree too. Like, I think it's so easy. And when I first started thinking about what I could do on that page, I started to like, I'm gonna make like buildings grow from the bottom and do all this like crazy stuff. But I think like that's such an easy trap to go down, where oftentimes just something like one thing that's like really simple can have the most impact.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, that those little things are they're like delightful and they don't get in the way and they're not in your face.
Little surprises.
Right. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you want to touch on?
No, I mean, I think I should give, I have my slides up on the web. It was probably a good thing.
Yeah, and we can include your slides and like we'll have links for a lot of the things that we talked about in our show notes.
I mean, we could also talk a little bit about, I don't know how much time we have, but like just about talking.
So yeah, that. How did you think it went? And like,
how did you think it went? I mean, that was my second time giving a technical talk.
I don't think I've ever given a technical talk. I've given design talks. I thought it went really well. I think you benefited from like having somewhat of a smaller crowd, and you were able to like on the fly kind of show us different things and answer questions. Like I really enjoy when I am actually giving the talk to have more of like a conversation with people.
Yeah, definitely.
As opposed to like me with the podium and expecting everyone that to think that I like know everything.
Yeah, I think I tried to do that on purpose and it actually worked. And so I think my third slide, like I did the me slide. Hi, I'm Brenda. I work at Thoughtbot. And then here's my Twitter fan handle. Follow me. And then the next slide was like you. So, you know, who's a designer, who's a developer, who works with SVGs, who does JavaScript. Like part of that was A, for me to understand the room, in a room of people I had no idea who was going to be there. And two, to also like promote interactivity already, you know? And mm-hmm. and then people kind of did start asking questions and I was really excited about that.
Yeah.
I wasn't nervous. I had more anxiety like leading up to it that I wasn't going to be prepared, but then like once it happens, it's like fine.
Yeah, that's always for me too. Like I hate the like hour before the talk. For me, that's like so anxiety ridden in. And then like once I'm like into the talk, after I've gotten through like the first 5 minutes, I start to relax and like calm myself down. But I'm also like, I don't really enjoy getting up in front of people. I also have like, it's probably a form of imposter syndrome where like, as soon as I learn something, I think that everyone else knows it.
Yeah.
And so I think like, why do they actually want to listen to me? Like, I have nothing to pride them. They should already know this. It's easy. and like, I think that thinking certainly hurts me, especially like in leading up to it. I'm like, I'm not going to provide them any useful information. They already know this. Like, why am I talking about this? This is stupid. And so like for me, one of the biggest hurdles is getting over that.
Yeah. I mean, we all do that, right?
Do you have any other like tricks? Since this, I guess it was your second talk, did you learn anything new from it? Like, what are you going to do differently next time?
Yeah, I learned a ton from it. I mean, I think first it was video recorded. So I'm terrified and fascinated waiting to see myself. Like I'm always terrified and fascinated when I see myself in video, but I think that's going to be really good when I can look at it objectively. to understand myself. Like I don't think I was talking fast, but I know everybody talks fast when they're giving talks. So I just kind of want to see my manner. I think the other thing and that works for me is being casual, and open and that's something that we can do in our field. That's, you know, that's expected, or that's, you know, that's fine as part of our culture, and that's more what I'm like, so that makes me feel more comfortable if I'm not having to present myself super formally, and so if I'm more comfortable, I'm gonna feel more confident, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I do like things like, we didn't do it last night, but like I like to get to the place a little earlier to like feel a little more confident and comfortable in my like the environment. And that helps me sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't know.
take a shot beforehand. No, I didn't do that.
I know, like, there are people that like to do that. I like to go for a run, not like right before it, but like the morning of, just because I know that it'll get rid of some of the extra energy and anxiety that I'd have, like, if I didn't leading up to it.
That's good. That's a good idea. I also, right when, because we were working together in an office yesterday, and then you left about an hour before I did. And as soon as you left, I closed the door and, like, went through my talk as if I was giving it, like, very quietly. Right, so I did that like an hour before I actually gave the talk. And that, I think, calmed me down a lot because I was like, oh, I know what's going on. Okay. Like, just that it was right beforehand. I also really enjoy the conversations afterwards because I didn't think about it that, like, I really just showed my personality and I've just kind of showed myself in a way to people whom I don't know. And then the way people approach you afterwards to talk to you kind of was nice. Like, everybody was super nice. And, I think, like, that was a form of feedback, was how people approached me afterwards in a positive way.
Yeah, no, I think it totally does. I think allowing your personality to show in your talk and in your slides is really important. And that'll
also... It's really
also...
important to have boy bands animated GIFs in your slides.
I think it's just really important to have animated GIFs in your slides.
I think so, too. I do, too.
I've never seen a good talk without animated GIFs. Yeah. So there's that.
Or memes. Or both. Hopefully both.
Both. Yeah. And I also, hopefully, you're comfortable with who you are. Or, like, whoever's giving the talk is comfortable with who they are. So, like, the more you can display that, you know, the better off you'll be and the more comfortable you'll be giving the talk.
Yeah, it's fun. I'd do it again.
So, if anyone is looking for someone to give a talk at their conference or meetup, shoot an email to Brenda.
Okay.
I think we're at a good point to end this.
Cool.
So thank you so much, Brenda, for filling in for Ada. So everyone listening, you can find our show notes, especially with a lot of those helpful links that Brenda mentioned throughout our conversation at tentative.fm/10. You can tweet us at tentative.fm. You can email us at hosts@tentative.fm. If you like the show, please rate us on iTunes. Brenda, do you actually, you want to give everyone your Twitter handle or like?
Sure.
If people want to reach out to you to have you speak, where should they go?
Yeah, I mean, I'm Brenda@thoughtbot.com. I'm Brenda Marie NYC at my Twitter handle, which means I can never move. Or I'm brendastorer@gmail.com.
Cool. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.